Access number 30649, Mr. Ted Hill, Rail 1. Could you tell me when and where you were born, Mr. Hill?
I was born on the 7th of September 1932 in an army camp in Blackdown, South Wales.
And could you tell us a bit about your family background, you know? And
well, as you might have gathered from my first answer, my dad was in the army, long service. He was one of the old contemptibles in the First World War, and was honoured with a contemptible's medal because he got it twice, actually, because he was wounded very early on. He was there long enough to qualify for the medal, and then he was wounded, brought back to England, and back there before the 3 months of the contemptibles was up. So he got a rosette on his medal for the First World War, which is very rare, actually.
Now, which regiment was he with? Or
he was a Royal Engineer, so he was posted to other regiments. There was never, to my knowledge, a Royal Engineers regiment, except when they were back in their depot at Chatham or wherever. I remember he was with the Horse Guards in London, things like that. But anyway, he was long service. He served in the First World
War. Did he ever tell you much about his service in the Great War? I mean, you know, just
oh, yeah.
What do you remember of his time?
He used to tell me about in the trenches a lot. And he, at one time, he was with the Gurkhas. And he used to tell me, you always had to have your boots laced in the proper English manner, because the Germans tied their boots different to us. And he said these Gurkhas used to crawl around in the dark and feel your boot laces, and if they were done up wrong, they would knife you with their kukuris. And he did say some English blokes did get killed by the Gurkhas because they didn't have their boots done up in the standard army fashion. But I think that was his abiding memory about in the trenches, you know, the terrible conditions they were in. But he survived, and he stayed in the army.
Did it affect him, you know, physically or mentally, his time?
No, he stayed in the army. He got up to the rank of company quartermaster, sergeant major. And he took his family with him all the time. I mean, I was born in Wales, whereas my father was a Cornishman and my mother was from the Fens of East Anglia. I was born in Wales. My sister was born in Germany. I think my middle brother was born in Germany as well. And my eldest brother, I think, was the only one who was born in England. And we travelled around with him. I mean, the highlight of it was in 1937, I was five. I went, though the whole family went, on a posting to Singapore for 2 years. And we actually left Singapore. My father started getting stomach ulcers. And they sent us home in 1939, and war broke out on the way home.
Now, what do you remember? I'll come back to that. What do you remember about your time out in Singapore? Because you know.
Oh, although I was five when I went out, I remember it very well because I started school in Singapore. My brothers were older, especially my eldest brother. He joined the Scouts, the Cubs and the Scouts, while he was there. But I remember it. I remember we lived in army blocks with a servant called an armour, which was a Chinese woman we had, who lived on the premises, because although we were in blocks of six houses all joined together, there was like a little house beside it or in front of it with a wash place and all that, and a bedroom where the armour lived. So she actually lived on the site with us. And I remember it very well in Changi in Singapore.
That's where in the married quarters of Changi?
In the married quarters, yeah.
Was it Changi camp then? You were in, or just...
Well, no, it wasn't a camp.
It was just married quarters.
Married quarters scattered around the fort with the guns pointing the wrong way. I remember that because I think it was Z Block We lived in two blocks during our time, M and Z, and I can't remember which was which. One was right down by the water, the sea, and the other one was up by the fort on the top of the hill. And, well, we were in Z block last on the top of the hill, which I took a party from the Belfast Association back on the hero's return from the lottery. I got £37,500 out of them about 4 years ago. And we went back to Singapore for 4 or 5 days and then on to Sydney in Australia. But I went down to Changi to look, and the hill had disappeared. The fort had been dismantled. They'd saved a gun as a memento, the Singaporeans. And the hill was actually removed and used to reclaim land around Changi. So everything had completely changed. And the new airport was there, which was an extension of the RAF one.
Now, what about you say you started your education in Changi, well, in Singapore.
In Singapore.
What's your memory? What were the army school like?
I can't remember, really. I know I enjoyed going to school. And the army teachers, well, we had, as far as I remember, we, as infants, we had women teachers. Whether they were army or attached to the army, I don't think they had women soldiers in those days, did they?
No, I don't think so, not much. Now, what about, you returned home just as the war was breaking out. What do you remember about that? I mean, your father was ill. Was that the main reason? Or?
Yeah, we came home because he had ulcers. War broke out when we were in the Indian Ocean on the Dilwara, which was a troop. What?
To the outbreak of war, when you were on the...
Well, we were on a troop ship, and it was full of troops. So, I mean, I've got an abiding memory of all the men and women, their wives, crowded round speakers on the deck as they made the announcements of war breaking out. So, I mean, they were greatly interested, and I would assume they were greatly concerned that another war was starting, because a lot of them were in the First World War, like my father. And that was on the Dilwara, and we carried on, went through the Med. But when we got to Suez, they stopped us at Port Said, which was the Mediterranean end, and we had to come through the Mediterranean in convoy, which was one of the first convoys of the war, because it had only been open, started a few days. And the Dilwara was one of the first casualties of the war, because we zigzagged through the Mediterranean and getting towards Gibraltar, we zigged when someone else zagged and collided. So the Dilwara was left behind, and it was put in docks to be repaired because we had a big hole in the side, which was a bit frightening. Lifeboat stations in the middle of the night. But at my age, at 7, 8 years old, was a big adventure.
So what happened to you? You just went to Gibraltar then?
Yeah, and the ship was repaired, and a couple of weeks later we carried on with another convoy back to England, where my father went to Netley Hospital, which is beside Southampton Water. And we went to my granddad's farm, like my mother's family, my granddad's farm in Wardy Hill near Ely.
Wardy?
Yeah, W-A-R-D-Y. Wardy Hill near Ely in Cambridgeshire.
Is that where you were going to stay? How long did you stay there for? Was that
about 6 months, because my dad was in hospital a long, long time with these stomach ulcers, and they were so bad they medically discharged him from the army because they were getting all these youngsters in the army. They did ask him back a couple of years later, when they were short of men, but he still wasn't right. He was on a diet. I remember he used to eat raw eggs and things like that as part of his diet. So he never went back. He joined the Home Guard. But when he came out the army...
That'd be 1940, would it, or 39 still?
No, that was early 1940. And he had to get a job, but he got a job in the post office at March in Cambridgeshire, which was about, I don't know, 10 or 12 miles from Wardy Hill. And we moved there in a council house. And there was the family. There was four children. I had two brothers and a sister. And I'm the youngest of the family. And the last one, actually.
Now, what do you remember of life at March?
Well, I started in the junior school at March. And I was a bit of a celebrity at school because I'd lived abroad. I'd lived in Singapore for 2 years. And I mean, March was a real old country town where people didn't move around much. They went to places like Hunstanton for the summer holidays, which was on the Wash. And, well, they wasn't travelling people in those days. And we'd all been abroad. We'd lived abroad. So, I mean, I was questioned endlessly by kids at school, mates and such like. Got invited to lots of birthday parties on the strength of living in Singapore, I think.
How did you settle in generally? You settled in well from the sound of it.
Oh, yeah. I remember I felt the cold terribly after 2 years in Singapore, which was very, very hot, where we had to wear sun hats all the time and keep covered up. To come home, it was winter, you know, coming on to winter when we got home. I must tell you, being an ex-naval man and in my own way a little bit of a historian, I am quite proud of the fact that I went to Singapore on a troop ship called the Raw Pindi, which in the Second World War early on was converted to an armed merchant ship, and Captain, oh blimey, the captain was the father of a famous presenter on television.
It's gone out of my head, but they'll know who you mean.
He was a reserve officer during the war, but his captain fought the Scharnhorst, which the Belfast later helped to sink during the war. But the Raw Pindi, I think they've still got the wooden shipside steps in front of the Tower of London. They did years ago, because I remember seeing them with the plaque on that they were, when the ship was sunk, they were one of the things that was fished out of the water.
And do you remember anything about the Raw Pindi? Or is it because you were only five, you know, young?
I was five.
So,
but I do remember it's a massive thing. You know, the decks were enormous for a little, and to run round. The big memory I have of the Raw Pindi is my mother used to take us all down the bathroom, where there were separate bathrooms, and I wanted to go to the toilet. So she let me out. There was a big gap under the doors. They wasn't doors to the floor or the deck. And I just crawled underneath the door and went up to the toilet. And when I came back, I crawled under the wrong door. There was a lady standing up in the bath and she screamed. That's my main memory of the Raw Pindi. Although I have got a couple of menus, daily menus from the Raw Pindi that was in my mother's possessions when she died, and I had them, which lists all the food that you could have for breakfast and dinner and such. And it's amazing the choices they had, even on a troop ship in those days.
Now, what about your education at March? How did you do at school? Because you're getting a bit older now.
Not terribly well. I went to the ordinary school. I failed the 11 plus, or the examination in those days to go to grammar school. But I did pass to go to technical school. But the nearest technical school was in Cambridge. And there wasn't the grants and things around. And my father, on a postman's pay with four children, couldn't afford for me to go. So I never went. I left school at 14.
Now, how did you do? I mean, what subjects did you like or dislike at school?
I liked geography and English, the practical subjects, which were very thin on the ground during the war because most of the teachers were called up for the war, and they called back retired teachers. And most of my teachers were women who had been called back. I hated maths because I was never very good at it. Which may sound strange because I finished up as a college lecturer and had to teach maths on occasions. But I went through. I mean, I was usually about the middle of the class, you know, nothing outstanding.
Any big interest in sport or, you know, at school? Or?
Yeah, I used to play cricket a lot. That was my big sport at school. I mean, we played football and all the other things. To the limitations of having a games master, which we didn't always have. Because I remember the games master at my last school was so old. I think we thought he was nearly 80. You know, he'd called back for the war, and he used to have a lot of time off at his age. And then...
Now, what about the effects of the war? You know, I mean, there's a variety... I mean, was there any sort of... What impact did rationing have? You're fairly in the country there, but I mean, food and clothing rationing, was that a big impact on you or not?
Not terribly that I remember, because not too many miles away, my granddad had a small holding, you know, farm, which had everything a small holding used to grow fruit and veg, and yeah, chickens and that, and a couple of cows. So we were never short. Because we used to visit each way quite regularly, and they would bring stuff, and if we were there, they would give us stuff to take back, stuff that's in season on the farm. And my father's post office round, because he was a postman by then, his delivery was a country one. And on his bike with a carrier on the front, a red bike, I'll never forget that, he delivered in the country. So we were never short of anything, really.
And what about clothing?
Well, we had relatives in America. And there's a bit of a story to that, because my dad's sister married... Well, she got involved with a German prisoner of war. This is in the First World War, when, you know, they really hated them. And my father and his brother had served in the army during the war. And at the end of the war, this German prisoner stayed on, and they married. And the reaction was so bad in Cornwall, this was, in Redruth, where they lived, they went to America, and they were ostracized by the family. There was no contact until the Second World War, where they must have read about how bad things were in England, rationing and all that. And I always remember the first contact, they sent big parcels of clothes over to us. And I remember I had a beautiful, it wasn't a fur coat, but it seemed to be very furry, and it was a lovely coat, and I always remember that, because I was about 9 or 10 at the time. And then their children, one of them was in the army, in the medical side, he was posted to England when America came into the war, and he came to see us, I remember the American soldier covered in badges and medals. And then, I mean, we kept contact then. Even when my parents died, there was still contact between my brothers and sister and I and the people in America. A couple of them came over and visited once, but they were a bit too far for us. They lived in California. And I suppose their children are still there.
Now, what about air raids? Any air raids in the March area? Or did you have an air raid shelter? Personally?
We didn't have a shelter. There was town shelters, which
what were they
built.
Like? Communal ones, you mean?
Yeah.
What were they like? Can you remember?
Oh, they were horrible, dark, dank places. And they were a mile away from where we lived. We lived on the outskirts of the town. So we never, ever went in them. I went in them as a kid. Because they were near my school. But they were terrible places.
What pattern were they? Were they above ground with a flat roof, were they?
No, they were sunk in with a thing. So you went down, so there was always water and damp. And then people started using them as toilets. And they wasn't the most safe places.
Any benches or anywhere to sit down?
Oh, yeah, there was wooden benches. But March was attacked quite a lot by the German Air Force because Whitemoor was one of the biggest marshalling yards for the railways in Europe, actually. And the Germans used to have incendiary raids to try and light it up and then bomb. And they never actually got the marshalling yards. They got the town on a couple of occasions. And sadly, I mean, the town, we had loads of evacuees and whole families and two houses which were bombed and the families wiped out, were evacuees from London. No local people were hurt at all, just evacuees, which is rather sad. But we survived. I mean, they used to miss mostly because it was a rural area and houses wasn't packed together like they are these days.
What do you remember of the raids? Where would you be? Or just at home?
We used to get up and go in the kitchen, and we had a boiler in the corner, and the kitchen sink came off the boiler, so there was like a space underneath, and my mother or father used to put me under there. I was the youngest, I was the baby of the family, so I went under there. Now, during the war, my brother was 16. This is the eldest brother, and he joined the Navy. Now, my father, being a 28-year soldier, dearly wanted him to go in the Army, and he wanted to go in the Navy. And I remember long arguments of George, my brother, and my dad, Army versus Navy. And in the end, my dad gave in, and he joined the Navy. He did the same thing with my middle brother, who also wanted to join the Navy just after the war, but not so much as he did with the eldest one. And when my turn came, when I was 16, he'd given up then. So I just joined the Navy.
Did you follow, during the wartime, did you follow where your brother was in the Navy?
Oh, yeah.
Do you know where he went?
Yeah, he joined as a boy, as we all did, actually. And he went to the Isle of Man. Well, I think initially he went to Ganges, boys trading. And then he specialised in telegraphy. He became a radio operator and left the seaman branch completely because telegraphy was a branch on its own. And he went to the Isle of Man. He was there for a year, 18 months or so. I'm not really sure of the time, but it was a long time, and became a radio operator, telegraphist. And I remember he went on to Russian convoys on HMS Dido, the anti-aircraft cruiser that was on Russian convoys. Because I was an avid stamp collector in those days, and he used to get in the post office in Russia and buy me stamps as a memento, which I've still got, actually. Well, my son's got them now. But he told me tales about that. I mean, because our sailors, merchant sailors more than naval sailors, had a terrible time on Russian convoys. I mean, the casualties in the merchant fleet were horrendous. And when they used to get to Russia, the Russians allowed them a canteen in Murmansk at certain hours, like, you know, evening time, and they'd line the route with armed troops to see that there was no wandering off anywhere, and they could only go from that to that. He had to get permission from someone to go in the post office to buy stamps.
Now, so anything else you remember about the war years? Any other impact the war had when you... I mean, I know you're still pretty young during the war, but...
I mean, the war was with us all the time, because at Whittlesea, I mean, I lived on the edge of March, and you could see Whittlesea, which was famous for its brickyards, massive chimneys everywhere. But between us and the brickyards, like March and the brickyards, towards Whittlesea, there was a bombing practice area where the RAF used to practice bombing. And they'd be at it every night, daytime and nighttime. And once two of them collided, and they crashed in the fields near us in March, these aeroplanes, and we were out scavenging for bits of perspex. It was a new thing. If you got a bit of perspex, you could make rings and things, which we all used to try and do. I remember coming home with a pocket full of bullets that I'd found in a field. Well, they were big ones, not ordinary, like 303. These were great big ones from aircraft guns. And my dad nearly passed out when he saw them. And because he took them all off me and they went up the police station. But my dad's been in the Home Guard, always had a rifle which he used to take to bits. He used to take a couple of bits off it and hide or carry. I think he used to carry the bolt in his pocket so that we couldn't play with it. But
what sort of stuff did he do with the Home Guard? I mean, was he very active in it?
Oh, yeah. He was the only... The post office formed their own Home Guard, so there was a small Home Guard for the March Town post office, which was quite a big post office because it did a fair area of country as well as, you know, villages around March. And he was the only ex-soldier in it, and it was a bit like Dad's army. It always got under his skin that he was the only ex-soldier so experienced after 28 years in the army. And the postmaster was the officer and his deputy was the sergeant. A friend of theirs was a corporal and my dad was a private. Yeah, any training they did, my dad had to lead it all because he knew it all, you know. And they used to go on manoeuvres and that Sunday morning, you know, they had little cracker things like the string paper thing that you have in Christmas crackers. They used to have them and they'd sneak around and if they saw someone, they'd pull it and say, "You're dead," which led to great arguments and him coming home some Sunday mornings early because they didn't play the game. But it was, you know, they were great. Although they were war years, for us kids, they were great days. I mean, there was lots going on.